Welcome, listeners. I am Dr. Michelle Dexter, and I'm doing this interview for the National Social Anxiety Center here with our guest, Dr. Michael Trainer. Dr. Trainer, do you want to talk a little bit about the research study that we will be talking about?
Sure. So I'm an assistant project scientist at the UCLA Anxiety and Depression Research Center, directed by Dr. Michelle Krask. And she is sort of running a study that I've been working on with her for a few years now. That's called our OPDEX study, which is short for Optimizing Exposure Study. And it's really a study designed to help us understand some of the best methods for conducting exposure therapy for anxiety disorders in general. But this particular study is looking at people with either social anxiety disorder or panic disorder.
Okay. And how did you first become interested in research with individuals who meet criteria for social anxiety disorder?
I think, if I'm being honest, broadly speaking, my research interests are related to anxiety disorders in general or trauma-related disorders and some of the things that they share in common. And particularly trying to understand a little bit more about the mechanisms through which treatments work. So why do they specifically work, and can we target those mechanisms to make them more effective? And of course, social anxiety is one of the most prevalent mental health concerns that individuals have, and particularly one of the most prevalent anxiety disorders. And so, certainly the idea of trying to enhance treatment, even though we have some very good treatments for social anxiety disorder, is very exciting.
And what was the rationale behind combining individuals who meet criteria for panic disorder and social anxiety disorder in this same study?
So generally the idea for looking at the types of ways we want to examine exposure therapy is one, as I mentioned, that how prevalent and common social anxiety disorder is, but two, social anxiety disorder and panic disorder are particularly amenable to exposure therapy the way we're going to be conducting it, playing around with it, examining it a little bit. Things with sometimes feared outcomes that are far off, like generalized anxiety disorder, and of course not always, and in some instances of obsessive compulsive disorder. We thought that would just complicate our research study a little bit, and so sticking to panic or social anxiety disorder seem to make the most sense.
Mm-hmm. And what are the various study conditions?
So really, as a lot of people probably know, exposure therapy is one of our gold standard treatments for anxiety and anxiety-related disorders. Works exceptionally well for a large percentage of individuals, but there's certainly a not insignificant percentage of individuals that either don't benefit or sort of relapse, and that's prompted a lot of people to want to, as I was mentioning, look at the mechanisms a little bit more. And one of the traditional ways of doing exposure therapy for a long time across a lot of disorders has been based upon what is known as more habituation models, sort of staying in the situation until fear declines by a given amount, and repeating that situation or that exposure to the stimulus or the sensation or things like that, and looking at how fear declines almost between sessions, like you can imagine between therapy sessions. Dr. Krask, who's the head of the ADRC and others, have been writing for some time, based upon all the research that's been done in the lab and with people with anxiety disorders, that model might not quite map on to what we know about why exposure therapy might work. And so Dr. Krask and others, and I've tried to be involved with this as well, have started to think about exposure therapy, kind of a return to how we first thought about exposure therapy, which is more based upon kind of helping our brain learn that a particular feared outcome is not going to occur. And really based in theories of what people might be familiar with, known as like classical conditioning, Pavlovian conditioning, these type of learning by association. And so this study is really designed to kind of compare a more habituation model, stay until the fear declines type model, to a model that is more based on targeting this associative learning process a little bit. So two different ways of doing exposure therapy to just see, you know, is one a little bit more effective than the other, or what are some of the mechanisms that are going on. So as a long-winded answer to your question, people are generally randomized to either receive kind of the more habituation model of exposure therapy or this additional model that we've been working on developing or fine-tuning, at least, that is based more in sort of this associative learning process.
And what outcomes are being measured?
So a variety of different things. You know, a lot of individuals do clinical interviews with clinicians who look at the diagnosis of the disorder, how severe it is, a lot of different questionnaires that also tap into a variety of symptoms. People are also doing some tasks in our laboratory, so at the beginning of treatment, in the middle of treatment, at the end of treatment, so we can track types of learning processes like we're talking about, as well as their psychophysiological responses. So we're measuring sort of fear and anxiety on a psychophysiological level, so that's another sort of outcome that we're looking at.
And either in this study or even preliminary studies, what has been the biggest surprise to you?
I mean, I think it's sort of hard to say, but I think some of the more interesting things is, particularly with exposure therapy and anxiety disorders, the field of psychology, psychiatry, you knows a tremendous amount. But when you really immerse yourself into what we know, you're also confronted by how much we still have yet to learn. Mm-hmm. So as a field, in terms of clinical psychology, again, exposure therapy is one of our success stories, and yet there's a considerable amount left we need to know about the precise mechanisms through which it works, certain types of people that it might be more or less effective with, how to enhance that process. There's just an amazing amount left for us to understand, which both makes it challenging but exciting.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like these are some of the clinical implications of the research. Are there others that you haven't talked about that you imagine could be clinical implications?
I mean, I think the strongest clinical implication will be ways to just fine-tune our practice of exposure therapy. I mean, no one is suggesting we sort of abandon it at all. I mean, everybody who's investigating it is a huge proponent of exposure therapy. But there's a non-significant number of people who don't benefit from exposure therapy, and of course we want to improve that. So I think the clinical implications will be to further improve how we work with clients by doing exposure therapy, making it more potentially shorter in duration treatment, but certainly more long-lasting, more robust, more powerful, and I think really... the goal of so many of us as clinicians is to work ourselves out of a job, and so that people, to treat as many people as effectively as possible in as short a time.
And learning is such a salient part of this research. What do you hope a general audience will learn from this research?
I think, I think a general audience, I think it would be great to sort of demystify a little bit about what's going on in the therapeutic process. I mean, I think so much in our culture in general where therapy is a sort of unknown or there's a lot of misconceptions. And so I would hope that this sort of research and the way it's communicated to a general audience sort of pulls back the curtains on that a little bit. And in doing so, makes this type of therapy much more understood and approachable.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Trainer, not only for the interview with us today, but also for your continued work in pursuing this.
My pleasure.